This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 330 for the weekend of September 14th through September 16th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office. This podcast where we talk about movies, TV, and other stuff that we might find interesting, and we hope that you do too. So, Art, what's going on over there?
Not much. Finished up a hard week and ready for another long weekend, so I can't complain. I don't go back to work till Monday. So, yeah, I'm ready to do some stuff, have some fun, play some games, maybe even go watch a movie.
Okay, speaking of movies that someone watched, awkward segue. Here we go with last week's box office results. So the first segment of the show is we just talk about how movies did at the box office last week. So for the weekend of September 7th through September 9th, 2018, here's your top five. At number one, new release, The Nun, $53.8 million. Yeah, $13,882 per screen, and that's reportedly on a $22 million budget. At number two, we have Peppermint, $13.4 million. That's in its first week release. In the third spot, we have Crazy Rich Asians in its fourth week release. It pulled down $13.1 million with a drop of 40%. So, you know, it had to happen sooner or later.
Yeah.
At number four, in its fifth week release, we have The Meg at $6.1 million. And at number five, we have Searching, $4.5 million. So in its run, it's made $14 million over 3 weeks. But it still went up 800 screens for 2,000. That's not bad.
Not bad, not bad. Yeah. That opening for The Nun, that is crazy. $50 million on a $22 million budget. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people were expecting that. You know, we talked about it last week, and the Rotten Tomatoes number was not great. But I don't think that stops people from scary movies. You know, and we're still, 6 weeks out from Halloween, but it's not stopping people. Okay, so that's going to be it for the box office results for last week. So now we're going to go to segment number two, and that's what's coming out in the theater this weekend. And I thought September was going to be kind of a ho-hum month, but apparently not. We have three movies hitting wide release. So Art, why don't you tell us about the first one of three?
All right, we have The Predator, rated 36% on the tomato meter, 126 reviews counted, 45 fresh, 81 rotten. 94% want to see it out of 1,718 users. From the outer reaches of space to the small town streets of suburbia, The Hunt comes home in Shane Black's explosive reinvention of the Predator series. Now the universe's most lethal hunters are stronger, smarter, and deadlier than ever before. Having genetically upgraded themselves with DNA from other species, when a young boy accidentally triggers their return to Earth, only a ragtag crew of ex-soldiers and a disgruntled science teacher can prevent the end of the human race. Rated R for strong bloody violence, language throughout, and crude sexual references. Genres action and adventure, horror, science fiction, and fantasy. Directed by Shane Black, written by Shane Black and Fred Decker. No runtime listed. So let's see who we have here. Michael Keel, Olivia Munn, and those are all the names I recognize. This is a
Jake Busey.
No clue.
Yvonne Strahovski from Chuck. Alfie Allen. Oh my God, I just forgot his name, but he's on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And I just have to laugh. Sterling K. Brown as government agent.
I was a hair's breadth away from picking up season one of Game of Thrones while we were at the store the other day to start working my way through it.
Don't bother. I will send them to you.
Well, I convinced Brittany to try watching it with me, so.
Okay. How do you feel about 36%?
Sounds about right.
Really?
This is,
okay.
Yeah, at this point, this is like, what, the fourth movie? Predator, Predator 2, Predator 3, Aliens versus Predator.
Yeah, but none of those were written or directed by Shane Black.
Okay. The name sounds familiar. What is he from?
Okay, so he was a writer on the original Predator.
Oh, okay.
He also did Iron Man 3.
Not
he
healthy.
He also did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Okay.
He also did, oh my God, The Nice Guys? Is it The Nice Guys? With Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling.
Right, right, right.
Fantastic
you really liked that
movie.
One. I know,
oh,
you
my God.
Really liked it. No, I know. I remember. I still did not see it. But okay. I mean, those are mostly, that's a good pedigree. It gives me a little more hope. I was weak on Iron Man 3, but I think they probably got a lot of studio interference on that.
Interesting. We'll be talking more about Iron Man 3 later.
Okay.
Which is kind of hubris at this point. Okay. So at this point, we usually talk about maybe some interesting or snarky critic reviews. So let's start with Mark Kennedy. I'm going to start with the rating at the very beginning. 1 out of 4 stars. So it's rotten. Scenes are poorly knitted together, especially towards the end. Time and tempo break down as if the film were snapping apart at the seams. Interesting. Going down a little bit. This is 2 out of 4. Richard Roper from the Chicago Sun-Times. Tremblay's work is so strong, so subtle, that so natural, it's as if he's in another much better movie. And so I was trying to think Jacob Tremblay. Where have I heard that name before? And I guess he was in The Room.
Oh, okay.
Or Room. So, yeah, he probably stepped down for him, as young as he is.
Yeah, I'm not on fire to see this.
Peter Howell from the Toronto Star. The movie pays big-time homage to 1980s cinema, including an action score that sounds like something Spielberg would have thrown away. So he's bagging on the score, too. Yeah, that's not good. So did anybody like it? Well, we have Rob Carnevale from Indie London. The result, while enjoyably enough, also feels like a missed opportunity, especially given that it's come from a veteran of the franchise. 3 out of 5 stars, even though it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
All right. So, I don't know. I kind of wouldn't mind seeing Predator on the big screen, but, you know, kind of like you, this isn't really pushing me. Kind of thing. Even though I love me some Shane Black, so I don't know. Stay tuned. Maybe I'll report back next week. All right. So now we're going to go to something a little different. Let me tell you about White Boy Rick. 59% on the tomato meter. Out of 59 reviews, 35 fresh and 24 rotten. And, oh, look, all these people told us that they want to see it. 413 out of 413 people, 90% want to see it. So here's your description. Set in 1980s Detroit, at the height of the crack epidemic and the war on drugs, White Boy Rick is based on the moving true story of a blue-collar father and his teenage son, Rick Wershey, who became an undercover police informant and later a drug dealer before he was abandoned by his handlers and sentenced to life in prison. It seems backwards. Usually they're a drug dealer and then police informant. All right, so rating is R for, oh boy, language throughout, drug content, violence, some sexual references, and brief nudity. Your genre is drama. Oh, look, only one drama. That's refreshing. Written by Andy Weiss, Logan Miller II, and Noah Miller. Directed by Jan Demange. And here's another one that doesn't have a runtime. And your cast, Matthew McConaughey, Richie Merritt, don't know who he is, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Bruce Dern.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I do like crime films, but I don't know about this one.
Yeah, no, I've seen the previews for this, and it's definitely not grabbing me.
Strangely, it is a hair from becoming afresh.
It is.
So there are some good reviews for this one. So like Johnny Oleksinski, watching this young man's life fall apart because of his destructive community and family is harrowing. 3.5 out of 4. Here we go, the point fives again. More well-known, Liz Braun from the Toronto Sun. White Boy Rick is an intriguing story brought to life by impressive performances, particularly for McConaughey and Merritt.
McConaughey is a fabulous actor. He does not disappoint. Yes. He's had so many great roles. This totally seems like something he could really throw himself into. But it's cable for me. When it comes out on cable, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. All right, so why don't you tell us about the last of the three?
Okay, our last movie today, A Simple Favor. 85% fresh on the tomato meter, 60 total reviews counted, 51 fresh, 9 rotten, 97% want to see it out of 718 users. A Simple Favor, a stylish postmodern film noir directed by Paul Fahey, centers around Stephanie, Anna Kendrick, a mommy blogger who seeks to uncover the truth behind her best friend Emily, Blake Lively, sudden disappearance from their small town. Stephanie is joined by Emily's husband, Sean, Henry Golding, in this thriller and filled with twists and betrayals, secrets and revelations, love and loyalty, murder and revenge. Rated R for sexual content and language throughout, some graphic nude images, drug use, and violence. Genre is mystery and suspense, directed by Paul Fahey, written by Jessica Charzar and Darcy Bell. Runtime, 116 minutes. Let's see, we have people already listed. In addition, Eric Johnson, Gene Smart, Linda Cardellini. I saw a preview for this. It looks interesting. Got, you know, a psychological thriller. Not really in my wheelhouse, but it does look like it could be interesting.
I'm intrigued by this just because Paul Feig's a comedy guy, the same guy who did Ghostbusters and Bridesmaids.
I like Anna Kendrick.
Yeah, this is an interesting casting for her because I don't.
Oh no, it's not. If you see the trailer, it's not.
Yeah.
She totally fills the role.
Okay. Yeah, it almost seems like a variation on Gone Girl.
Maybe a little.
It's not really an examination of marriage type thing, but. Yeah, I do like film noir. So, but this is another video one. I don't think I'll get out for this one.
No, me neither.
All right, so that's going to do it for what's coming out at the box office this week. And so now the next segment is Share Time, where we talk about what we've been watching over the past week. Also, we play voicemails. So we have another one from Tad, and so Tad is kind of falling behind on things, so he's going to tell us what he's been up to. So Tad, take it away.
Hey guys, this is Tad calling in with what I've been watching. Let's see, I haven't been watching too much. Been watching, finishing up season 2 of Luke Cage on Netflix. I watched the first episode of season 2 of Iron Fist, and so far, Iron Fist looks like it's going to be better. But I want to finish up Luke Cage before I. Continue on with that. Other than that, I haven't really been watching a whole lot. Let's see. Haven't seen any movies. I might go see a movie tomorrow because the wife's working overtime, so she won't be home, and I might need something to do tomorrow evening, so I might, after work, go see a movie. I'll let you guys know if I do or not. Yeah, that's about it. That's all about all I've been watching. We're building a guest house, so pretty much that's going to be all my free time is working on that here, kind of coming up in the next few weeks or so. But all right, guys, thanks for the show. Still loving it, and I'll talk to you later. All right, bye bye.
All right, thank you, Tad. Now I feel much better because I haven't been watching a lot of stuff either, so that's okay. You can make it up on the next voicemail. All right.
I've got a buddy at work who's already all the way through the new Luke Cage, the new Iron Fist. He is all caught up on the Marvel, and he's bugging me about catching up too so we can talk about it. So I really need to get on that as well.
There's just so much.
There is.
So much. And, you know, The Good Place, season two just hit Netflix. It's just mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. All right. So, Art, go ahead and lead us off.
Okay. So, I finished Disenchanted. Disenchantment. I don't know. The new Matt Groening show on Netflix.
Close enough.
It's one of those two words, and I can't ever remember which one it is. I'm pretty sure it's Disenchantment. So I found the overarching story I was looking for. They really tied it all nicely together and then ended it on a cliffhanger. So it was only 10 episodes. I got it all finished. I enjoyed it. I'm going to want to see where it's going. I have no idea when we'll get more episodes, so that's kind of disturbing. But if you are a fan of The Simpsons and Futurama and you want to see something similar done in a fantasy setting, the art styling is similar but different. There's more of a roughness to it that I think comes with the kind of dark medieval fantasy setting that it's set in. Yeah, I just said that. I enjoyed it. I think it all tied together well at the end, and I enjoyed that part of it. And so, yeah, I would recommend it. I also, where am I here? Okay. So I watched Cars 3, finally. I had picked it up on DVD. It was available on Netflix, and I had still not watched it. They were doing a Cars marathon for some reason on the Disney Channel. So Aubrey had been watching Cars 1 and Cars 2. I really didn't watch either. I was busy doing other things. But I said, hey, you know, we have Cars 3. We should finally watch that. So we finally got around to watching it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, actually. I was surprised. And I was really surprised at kind of the direction it took. I think it was much better than the second one. I think it was a good follow-up to the story. They took a lot of threads that kind of ran throughout the entire the trilogy and kind of tied it all up at the end. And I'm really happy with where it went.
Did you recognize Fillion?
What do you mean, Fillion?
Fillion was one of the voices in Cars 3. Nathan Fillion.
No. Oh, Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know he was in it. Okay, I didn't recognize his voice. I wasn't looking for it specifically. Now I have to go back and watch it again and listen.
You're welcome.
A little more closely. Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed the movie, so that's not a problem. So I started listening to this Thundar the Barbarian podcast. And the premise is that they're looking back at all the episodes of the show. It's only like, I think it's 21 episodes. But the episodes didn't run in any real order. There's no real continuity to them. You know, the way they did shows back in the early 80s was they just did them as they were standalone shows. Thundar is interesting in that it takes place in post-apocalyptic America. And so a lot of times they throw in kind of like landmarks, you know, these destroyed landmarks. You see the Statue of Liberty, you know, you're in Manhattan, you know. And so they're doing this Thunder Road podcast where they are tracking them like they're on a road trip and trying to pick out where they are in America and following a through line of how they might have traveled from place to place, all the while giving commentary on just the episodes and the ideas. And they've done an interview with one of the original story editors, and it's all very fascinating. And how the studio kind of fell apart in the end, you know, because some things were said and a bunch of people left. And a lot of people who left went to Sunbow Productions. Sunbow Productions is the production company that was responsible for Transformers and G.I. Joe. So they kind of like, they left Thundar and immediately went over to producing G.I. Joe and Transformers. So I just thought that was really interesting. So I'm really enjoying this podcast, but that has caused me to go back and watch some Thundar the Barbarian, which I absolutely loved as a kid. The animation doesn't hold up, but the kind of like the ground they were breaking does. And so I still find it enjoyable. It's a real slice of my childhood. It was 82, 83. So I was like 9, 10 years old when this came out.
How did you watch it?
I have a DVD.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but then that led me to thinking about some other things. I a friend of mine, Facebook friend, started a cartoon action Facebook group. He's not just any action cartoon group. I think that's what it's called. And so people have been posting about all these different things, cartoons they watched growing up, things they vaguely remember. And that led me to go back and find some Black Star, which was another, you know, just 80s.
I was just thinking of the, what was the name of that show where the sword splits into two? Is that the one where the sword splits into two?
That is Black Star. That's crazy. Absolutely. That's funny. So I went back, I watched some Black Star. So I've been all over the place with things I've been watching lately. And last but not least, one of the Sam, a guy who goes to Sausage Fest, was posting that he was out and about at a hotel, had access to cable. He's into metallurgy, and he started watching a show called Forged in Fire about how it's like these cooking competitions, but it's with forging knives and swords instead. And I was like, I have got to check this out. So I started watching that. I think about 4 or 5 episodes in, I've actually gotten Brittany to watch it with me because she loves competition shows. She's usually watching baking competitions and cooking competitions. I said, hey, let's watch this knife competition. She was thoroughly engrossed. So it's just the format that kind of sucks her in. Half the time she's asking me questions. I'm like, I don't know. I just started watching this with you. I'm thoroughly enjoying that. I'm going to have to dig into that some more. That is what I have been watching.
Cool. Yeah. No, you know, Nick, that's yes. Like his favorite show.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He loves that show to death. And we're talking about how, you know, craftsmen like that are becoming more of an endangered species.
Not if you watch this show, you don't think
no,
so.
No,
everybody's
no, I,
doing
no,
it
I,
out there,
I understand
apparently.
That. I understand that, but yeah. All right, so what have I been watching? Nothing that I really hadn't seen before.
Okay.
I was walking through the library, looked at the new releases section, and I saw that they had Blockers on DVD. So I had the brilliant idea of showing Blockers to my 17-year-old daughter. That's what we did Sunday night.
Okay.
She thoroughly enjoyed it. She told me multiple times, especially with all the potty talk, girls don't talk like that. It sounds like guys writing how teenage girls talk.
Nice.
She thought it was hilarious, a little sweet at the end. I went and I checked out the special features since I had the DVD. There really isn't that much to write home about. Usually with like Judd Apatow movies, they do the linorama where they just show you all the lines they were thinking about putting in this part. Some of them are really funny, like the knocked up one's really funny, but nothing to really write home about.
Okay.
For this one. So that was really the only movie that I watched. I got shamed by my mother because she was like, how come you haven't told me about this movie or have you seen this movie? And it was about Hunt for the Wilder People. And she was like, we got to watch it on Netflix. And I said, well, it's not on Netflix and I've already seen it. I didn't think it was your kind of movie because it's kind of out there humor. For the listeners that maybe aren't aware, it's the guy who directed Thor Ragnarok. It was one of his movies before he did Thor, starring Sam Neill and I think Julian Dennison, who was the kid in Deadpool 2.
Okay.
And it's basically the two of them. He's an at-risk youth. Something happens to the mom, and she's out of the picture. And so Sam Neill doesn't really know what to do with him, so he takes him out into the bush in New Zealand. And now there's this big old, you know, police manhunt for him because they're not sure what he's doing with the kid. And actually, he's not doing anything. He's just, you know, being a foster father or whatever.
Right, right.
So it turns into this giant Western, very enjoyable film. I highly recommend it if you get a chance to watch it. So and I was a little shocked that my mom enjoyed it so much. Okay.
Nice. She's broadening her horizons.
So now let's move on over to some internet stuff. Okay. So there is a TED Talk given by this comedian, James Veitch. I think it's V, I don't know if it's W or V, but E-I-T-C-H.
It is James Veitch. We talked about this last week. So
did
unless
we?
You've dug up some more.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I talked about the, you know, his adventures with spam.
Right.
And we also, he does, there's another one about the agony of unsubscribe.
Okay.
Which is actually pretty hilarious. Not as funny as the other one.
I have not seen that one.
But my mom is just like, she is drinking the James Veitch Kool-Aid, and she's going to be showing up to all her friends tomorrow.
Nice. Okay, have you seen the one about the rubber ducks?
I haven't seen the one about the rubber ducks.
Okay, so you write that down. You have to track down the one about the rubber ducks. Have you seen the one about the hiring the PI and working out of an office?
No, I haven't seen that one either.
That's another really good one.
Which one was that on?
One of these is he's on like a talk show. It's not a TED Talk.
Okay, because I think I did see when he was either on Fallon or Kimmel, but I didn't watch all of it.
Okay, I thought they were both hilarious. The one about the rubber duck was funny, and the one about the where he's dealing with the landlady and he's trolling, he's just trolling people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's
well,
hilarious.
That's kind of his jam.
Yeah, no, he's hilarious.
Okay. And I have to talk about. I didn't watch the entire trailer. Apparently, there's going to be a documentary. F you all. The Uwe Boll story or Boll story?
Yeah. Uwe Boll is how I've heard it pronounced.
I just watched the first 45 seconds, and there's a reason that he's so hated. But then there's a good number of people that says you don't understand him. So love him or hate him, I think you'll be able to make up your mind. So I'm not a big documentary guy, but I might have to watch this one.
Have you seen any of his movies?
Fortunately, I have not.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen it either. I own one.
Really?
Yes.
And which one might that be?
In the Name of the King with Jason Statham and Burt Reynolds.
The Dungeon Siege one?
The Dungeon Siege one, yes. I saw that. I think I picked it up for like a buck. And I'm like, oh, I can't pass it up for a buck. I mean, you know, if I'm going to watch one of his movies, that's the one I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch the fantasy one. Why not? You know, and, you know, even if they're phoning it in, you got Jason Statham and you got Burt Reynolds. So and I think, you know, with the you know, him passing away recently, now might be a good time to go watch that.
Yeah, I'm looking at all his films. No, I never know.
No, I'm sure you would know. You would know.
Yeah.
You would remember.
Yeah. And I also discovered another podcast. All right. So this is a game show podcast. A game show about board games. This is called This Game is Broken. And hold on a second. I got to find... I closed it. Good radio. It's basically a podcast about a bunch of idiotic people who do idiotic things. And so part of the reason I gave it a listen is part of my... are these two acquaintances, the Brothers Murph, that I run into at every Strategic Con. Mm-hmm. It's they're both on it. And it's just these games that they come up with. One was, so they're in teams and one person has to, I think it was called sound charades. And so you have to convey to your partner what board game you're describing, but you're only allowed to do sound effects. It was brutal, but hilarious. There's really not much more to say than that, but I'm enjoying it, and those guys are funny, and I think there's a fair number of improv on the show, so it's not like normal they're just board game fans, but they do some improv stuff, which is I'm really enjoying it. The episodes end up being about a half an hour, but I'm really enjoying it. Okay. So that's going to end my share time, and now we can get to the last segment, is news, or when my voice doesn't crack, news. Okay, so, Art, what do you have for the group?
Okay, biggest news that I came across, Apple can remove purchased digital films. Have you been ditching your physical media library, for a digital one from your major VOD library and feel reasonably safe in the knowledge that those films will always be available? Think again. Twitter user Anders G. Da Silva has found himself in a few stories today after he tweeted that he lost three digital movies bought on the iTunes store in Canada. Da Silva wrote to Apple to complain about the missing movies. Apple wrote back saying the content provider has removed these movies from the Canadian store. Hence, these movies are not available in the Canada iTunes store at this time. Apple didn't offer Da Silva a real refund. Instead, they reportedly gave him 2 credits for renting a movie on the iTunes store. When he told them he was not in the market for rentals, they tried to appease him with 2 more rental credits. The case goes to the heart of the issue with digital ownership in that while you seemingly own your digital films, you don't really own them. You're only licensing them. A combination of lapsing licensing agreement and endless terms of service contracts means some titles can just disappear and you've no real recourse. A problem that applies to books, films, shows, music, and software on multiple services, including Amazon and iTunes. So I will continue to buy DVDs and hardcover books and screw digital stuff just disappearing.
Yeah, this was actually when I was in college and we had a computers and ethics course. We had the pros and cons of digital libraries type thing. And, you know, when there's a subscription, you know, as soon as your subscription ends, you don't get to keep any of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so this is not really that surprising.
No. But I think a lot of people just don't understand that.
I thought, if I had to bet money, there's no way in the world I would have guessed your first story.
Okay.
And there is huge news that came out this week, but I'm going to leave it to you, and I'm going to see if it comes up on your next story here.
All right,
so
not,
the fourth grader in me could not pass this one up. The Nun has a massive opening, but apparently The Nun has a massive box office opening. So it starts thusly. Reviews were terrible, but that didn't stop people from turning out for The Conjuring spinoff, The Nun, which easily took the top spot with franchise best $53.5 million. The story's even better worldwide, where The Nun launched simultaneously with the domestic release, something the franchise has never really done before. As a result, it pulled in an incredible $77.5 million just overseas. So combined, it took in $131 million worldwide for a film done on a tight $22 million budget. It is especially impressive considering that not only was the film savaged by critics, it nabbed a not-so-impressive C cinema score from audiences. The Jennifer Garner-led action film Peppermint also opened over the weekend to even worse reviews, but a decent $13 million in third place. The only other new wide opener was faith-based God Bless the Broken Road, which bombed with just $1.6 million. The Nun 2 is probably being written as we speak. All right, what do you got next?
Okay, I've looked over all of my tabs. There are only 2 that really jump out to me. Other than that, I don't have anything that I think was particularly newsworthy to me. Okay. After I read these 2, you can go ahead and shoot, because if it isn't one of these 2, then it's not on my list for sure.
Okay.
Okay, so... this really caught my eye, and it gave me an oh my kind of moment. Richie rumored for Captain Britain film. So little is known about the fourth phase of Marvel Cinematic Universe, especially in the wake of the production of the third Guardians of the Galaxy being put on indefinite hold. But one possibility that has popped up in a report says the Man from U.N.C.L.E. and the King Arthur Legend of Sword director Guy Ritchie is being eyed to take on the film adaptation of Marvel Comics hero Captain Britain. The site says studio space has been booked at Pinewood Studios in November and December to hold auditions for the project referred to as Captain Britain and the Black Knight. Richie is said to be the director booked in for those dates, with Marvel reportedly looking to fill the space left to be a likely delayed next James Bond film. The report is pure rumor for now and hasn't been confirmed. Bond is still trying to retain those dates, while Richie's schedule is booked solid with post-production on Disney's live-action Aladdin, along with plans to shoot a third film in the Robert Downey Jr.-led Sherlock Holmes film series. So that's pretty big news for a pretty small, let's say not really well-known superhero, like to the general populace at large. He is definitely in that, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Panther, you know, people who are in comics, absolutely know him 100%. I could talk to every person I know who doesn't read comics, and none of them will know who Captain Britain is.
Yeah, true. True. Okay. So do you have any DC news left?
I have no DC news. I have a couple of small things about who they're thinking about to fill the bat suit.
Okay, so nothing about Superman.
No.
Did you not hear about Superman?
I heard a rumor that Cavill might be out, but nothing solid.
Okay, so the Hollywood Reporter, and they reported this yesterday.
Okay.
Henry Cavill out as Superman amid Warner Brothers DC Universe shakeup.
Wow.
Okay, so basically, and you know it. Did they wake up one morning and say, you know what, we need to step away from the Snyder era, and so we need to get rid of Affleck and we need to get rid of Cavill? No. So this is what they led with. Talks broke down for a cameo in Shazam, so they couldn't figure out between all the parties involved to a shooting schedule so Superman could do a cameo in Shazam. And wow. Because he can't do, and because they couldn't make it work, DC is closing the door on other potential appearances for the actor. Okay. It says here, Warners have been trying to enlist Cavill, who most recently co-starred in Mission Impossible Fallout, for a cameo in Shazam. But contract talks between Cavill's WME reps and the studio broke down, and now the door is closing on other potential Superman appearances. That's because Warners has shifted its focus to a Supergirl movie. Which will be an origin story featuring a teen superheroine. This effectively removes an actor of Cavill's age from the storyline's equation, given that Superman, a.k.a. Kal-El, would be an infant, according to DC lore. Furthermore, Warners isn't likely to make a solo Superman film for at least several years. Superman is like James Bond, and after a certain run, you have to look at new actors. As such, Cavill will join Ben Affleck, who isn't expected to reprise his role for director Matt Reeves' forthcoming Batman standalone film as a hero on the way out. We have a great relationship and great respect for blah, blah, blah. That continues unchanged. Initially, we made no current decisions regarding any upcoming Superman films. A source says that the Shazam deal fell apart because of scheduling conflicts. And that is backed up by the fact that Cavill recently signed on to star in the Netflix series The Witcher. However, another source says that the Witcher commitment came after the Warner's impasse, suggesting a change in the studio's strategy. Now, remember that they got rid of Geoff Johns. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a regime change. And they're one, you know, I guess they're going to be doing, I forget what the characters are called, but kind of like, not the Birds of Prey, but the... They wanted to do kind of like a spinoff with Harley Quinn, where it wasn't Suicide Squad.
Right. Yeah.
So I saw somewhere else they're talking about Supergirl and then Batwoman. And then, you know, you have another Wonder Woman coming, or Wonder Woman 1984.
Right.
That is set to hit in November 2019. You have Aquaman in 3 months. And they've got Ezra Miller lined up for a Flash standalone.
Okay.
So, interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I think, and didn't we talk at some point they were talking about, like, decoupling all of them and just not having a DCEU anymore?
Well, I've heard that this Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix is not going to be a DCEU film.
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Yeah, that would have been so nice. I know you never really watched Justice League, the cartoon.
I bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces. The interactions between Shazam and Superman were just absolutely amazing. Like before Superman found out who he was, because Billy Batson was just absolutely starstruck anytime Superman was around. He totally worshipped and idolized him. All he wanted to do was to please Superman and to be a hero like he was. So it would have been so awesome to have that type of thing on the big screen, live action. But it is what it is. Maybe they'll get somebody else to do it.
Okay, what do you got next?
Theater owners want Netflix to do cinema runs. North America Theater Owner Theater Owners President and CEO John Fithian, representing exhibitors at Toronto Film Festival this week, has urged Netflix to follow the lead of rival Amazon and show their movies at the local multiplex. Our model can work for their movies too. If you want to play theatrically, come play theatrically. There's a model that works, and if it works for Fox, Amazon, and all these companies, because a theatrical movie is different. Blah, blah, blah. This caught my eye because, you know, if they started doing some theatrical, I don't know, because at one point they were pushing them out. They didn't want to do their theatrical releases. They're like, no, who's going to want to come watch a movie at the movie theater when they can see it, you know, at home for nothing? You know, and this led to that whole big debacle with the Cannes Film Festival. We're like, well, no, you're not showing in the theaters. You're not eligible to be at Cannes. So now they're changing their tune. So I think it's just interesting to see where this might go.
True. True. Okay. It's that time of the podcast where I have a cracked article.
Okay.
So here's five recent blockbusters that forgot to prove the villain is wrong. And so I don't know if I want to go through all five, but I'll just read the titles. Five, Infinity War's idea of an overpopulated universe is nonsense, but no one says that. Because what if if you're going to kill half of the population, if other people are going to be happy, what if you end up killing like most of the farmers? Where's the food going to come from? So that was that one. Number four, The Incredibles 2 dances around its villain being completely right about relying on superheroes to do everything. Number three, the Mission Impossible world is exactly as ugly as its villains claim. Trying to think how to boil this down. Okay, so the movie ends, spoiler alert, with Ethan Hunt preventing billions of people from dying slow, agonizing deaths. But the apostles, who are villains in the movie, are right, because the world Ethan lives in is perpetually on the brink of terrible violence. This is the third time in 7 years that Hunt's stopped some mass destruction at the last minute. He's forever meeting truly despicable people, from corrupt government agents to hugely influential arms dealers. Hunt's world does need a shock to snap it out of its cycle, in which he has to annually kick a nuke-wielding supervillain off a mountain. The message is once again about their crude method for achieving their ends, but not the fact that in reality the world is more peaceful than it's ever been. We've stopped fighting world-spanning wars every generation or two, Western crime rates are down, and terrorists can't continually get their hands on nuclear weapons like there's something you can really need, that's something you just really need to dig for on Amazon. Fallout, however, seems to say that, sure, the world is always teetering on the brink of disaster, but that's okay because we have Ethan Hunt to sprint around until he stops the nuclear timer with 1 second left. So sleep tight. Jurassic World immediately abandons the question of why we keep making dinosaurs. But this is the one I wanted to get to is this one right here. Deadpool 2. Deadpool 2 desperately wants you to care about one bad guy being reformed while murdering the rest. Deadpool 2 tries to build on the first Deadpool by offering a more serious story in between all the explosions and beheadings. The premise is that a guy named Cable travels back from the future to kill a kid named Russell. Now, before I read this next part, did you listen to the Deadpool 2 episode of Back to Producers?
Yes.
Okay, let me know if Tony mentioned this at all, because it's he always, whenever Cars gets brought up, he always has this one thing that he brings up. Okay, the premise is that a guy named Cable travels back from the future to kill a kid named Russell before he murders his abusive orphanage headmaster, gets a taste for crime, and grows up to be the supervillain who kills Cable's family. Deadpool gets involved and agrees that Russell needs to be stopped, but he wants to save Russell's life and convince him to follow a different path. A million criminals get killed in the process. You may recognize that as the exact plot of Looper. But while Deadpool succeeds in his mission, a side character then immediately kills the headmaster in a wacky gag at the end. There is a push and pull between caring about other people, even the bad ones, is important because caring is what keeps us from abusing our powers and causing suffering, and haha, caring about stuff is dumb. If you care, then you're dumb. Chimichangas and nutshots, LOL. So Cable and Deadpool slaughter dozens of random bad guys while debating Deadpool's argument that anyone can be redeemed. So why couldn't the lives of any of those people whom Cable and Deadpool eviscerated been turned around? Why couldn't the abusive orphanage staff they're mowing down be made to see the error of their ways? Why does Russell get a second chance, but the evil headmaster doesn't? Both are guilty of the same crime, i.e. harming kids. Because Russell was a child who can still turn his life around, you protest. Well, can't they use time travel to figure out what trauma caused the headmaster to turn out that way? They were limited in how much time traveling they can do. Okay, but Cable's an adult who is all set to blow a child's head off and didn't care how much collateral damage he caused until he was convinced to change his ways. He didn't need time travel to learn his lesson. Why does he get redemption while everyone else gets shot in the face? They're paying lip service to a clear moral lesson, but movie tickets are sold to people who want to see bad guys get what's coming to them. And while there's nothing inherently wrong with that, Deadpool's approach is like John Wick targeting his next headshot rampage at people who oppose gun control. We have to get these damn things off the streets. And it says bam. All right, so interesting about Deadpool 2 there. But that was, from crack.com, 5 recent blockbusters that forgot to prove the villain wrong.
So, yeah, I don't think Looper came up at all. They did talk about the so many other ways that time travel could have been utilized.
No, what I was referencing is that anytime Cars comes up, Tony has to bring up
Doc Hollywood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying it seems to come up all the time.
Yes. I thought about Doc Hollywood when the original Cars was on before we watched Cars 3. So yeah, they go hand in hand. Okay. Speaking of actors who aren't coming back to play a role, Kate Beckinsale won't do another Underworld. I am so sad. I have enjoyed so many of those movies and seeing her in that skin tight leather outfit. It made her an action star, but British actress Kate Beckinsale says she's done with Underworld franchise and won't be suiting up as a vampire Selene again. Speaking with Variety, she was asked straight up if she'd do another Underworld film. Her response was equally straight and blunt, "I wouldn't return. I've done plenty of those." They talk about a lot of different things, but I think what it really comes down to is the Underworld franchise's creator and director, Len Wiseman, also Beckinsale's ex-husband, stated last year he is currently developing a TV series spinoff. I just don't think she wants to work with her ex-husband anymore. And you know, who can blame her?
She's just not a team player. That's all it is.
Not a team player, yes. Suck it up and make another movie. No, not happening. We still have the originals, though.
Okay, so let's talk about Iron Man 3. So this is not from Crack. This is from Collider.com. And it's titled, In Defense of Shane Black's Iron Man 3. First sentence, Iron Man 3 is one of the most successful Marvel Studios movies ever made, but it's also one of the most divisive. It made $1.2 billion at the worldwide box office.
Wow.
And thus far, it's only been bested by Avengers movies and Black Panther. It was one of the most highly anticipated movies of 2013, effectively serving as a sequel to the 2012 The Avengers. The film opening in 1999 is no accident. We see Tony being an absolute jackass, not content to just rebuff a pitch from disabled scientist Aldrich Killian, but instead going one further by embarrassing the man, inviting him to a secret rooftop meeting that Tony never plans to attend. Tony's lack of regard for other human beings comes back to haunt him as Killian eventually destroys Tony's house, severely injures his best friend, and takes his girlfriend hostage. Everyone Tony loves is in danger, and it's largely his fault. A point made clear when Tony's midnight panic attack results in one of his suits threatening Pepper, Gwyneth Paltrow. It's only when Tony is stripped of everything and forced to take a hard look at his own internal problems that he's able to step up and right the situation. And that this is a result of a delightfully sincere friendship with a young boy, Ty Simpkins, is so very Shane Black. Indeed, one of the strengths of Iron Man 3 is that it is, for the most part, unabashedly a Shane Black film. There's the signature humor, the Christmas setting, the delightful wordplay, the narration, and even something of a detective story in the middle. Marvel Studios purposely hired directors who could be considered journeymen before this time. Even Joss Whedon's take on the Avengers was just to make it incredibly comic booky. With Iron Man 3, even though the ever-watchful Marvel Studios CEO Ike Perlmutter was still making boneheaded decisions, you can see the seeds of authorial personality that would grow in later films like Gunn with Guardians of the Galaxy, Taika Waititi, Thor Ragnarok, and Ryan Coogler's Black Panther. And while Iron Man 3 is nowhere near as Shane Blacky as Black Panther is Ryan Cooglery, it's a refreshing start. And the interesting thing is about the Mandarin, and I'm sure this is not going to be news for any of the hardcore fans, but Iron Man, so the Mandarin is Iron Man's most iconic villain from the comics, and some fans were adamant that he had to be included in the MCU. So Black and Pierce got to work crafting a version of this character that could work, but kept running up against a major issue. The Mandarin is kind of racist and pretty silly, and ran counter to their science-centric take on Iron Man 3. One day, Guy Pierce, the guy who played Killian, floated the idea that the Mandarin was just a facade, a theatrical frontman for a true and more grounded villain working behind the scenes. They pitched this to Marvel and got the green light, and Trevor Slattery was born. Some fans felt betrayed by his twist, others loved it. I'm firmly in the latter camp. For those who felt betrayed, it speaks to how well Black crafted a generally scary version of the Mandarin for the first hour or so of the film. But ultimately, is this really satisfying? Tony Stark goes through a deeply personal existential crisis to defeat a terrorist who wears flamboyant rings and blows stuff up. Villains have never been the MCU's strong suit, but even still, that would have been a bummer. Instead, we get Killian as the true villain, and Slattery makes his grand entrance in what remains one of the funniest performances in the MCU. Iron Man 3 isn't without his problems. Killian's mostly grounded nature and science-focused goals are at the very least make him stand out as a palate cleanser of sorts from the extreme sci-fi of the Avengers. But when we learn that Black originally intended for Maya Hansen to be the main villain, only to have boneheaded Ike Perlmutter nix the idea because girl toys don't sell.
Ugh.
The film's baddie even becomes more disappointing. And Killian's plan only kind of sort of makes sense in the first place. The Iron Patriot subplot is also a bit of unnecessary detour, and the film's devolution into high-flying explosions in the third act doesn't come close to reaching the excitement gained from the more intimate set pieces, like Tony fighting with one glove and one boot. And then you have Pierce's I am the Mandarin declaration, which felt like Marvel getting nervous about the twist during post-production, opting to pull its punch. Even with all that, and keeping in mind that at this point Feige was still reporting to the meddlesome Perlmutter, Iron Man 3 is a joy. Black is even able to stick the landing during the suit field set piece, driving home the thematic arc as Tony self-destructs all of his suits in a show of personal growth. That Iron Man 3 feels so much like a Shane Black movie, especially at that juncture, is a testament to Feige's willingness to push the boundaries of what a Marvel Studios movie could be. In hindsight, it's hard not to imagine that this film had a significant influence on the increasingly idiosyncratic nature of future MCU films, like Guardians of the Galaxy and Black Panther. Shane Black was somewhat allowed to make a Shane Black movie, albeit with certain constraints. And Iron Man 3 is all the better for it. So I don't know if I agree 100%, but interesting take on what, like you said in the beginning, is probably Marvel's most divisive movie.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, what do you have left?
So the rumors are running. We're talking about who Ben Affleck is out. And his is not contract negotiations. His is probably, you know, being back in rehab, whatever. But maybe contracts, maybe differences of opinions, writing problems, blah, 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 blah. Whatever it is, he's out. And they're talking about who might be in. John Hamm opened to being the Batman. So this is not a rumor. This is not something that's come out of the industry. This is him saying, hey, I can play the Batman. And I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody standing up, raising their hand, saying, I'll do it. Especially someone, a actor.
That's kind of how you got on the podcast. So keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. So anyway, especially an actor of his caliber. So yeah, I think he's got the look. I think he's got the acting chops. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see where that might go. Now, on the rumor side coming out of the industry, we have Kit Harington. With Game of Thrones wrapping up, that frees up his schedule. And so they've actually, inside DC, they had a mock-up done of his face on top of a photoshopped into a scene, you know, in the Batsuit. There was also a request for another actor who as yet undisclosed, but the person who released the story said this person was a lot more feeling in the same kind of vein as Affleck. So this would be like a real Affleck kind of replacement, whereas Kit Harington would be taking it in a different direction. And Harrington even says himself that he'd be more interested in a, I think the word he used was sillier, just not so grim and dark and gritty as they've been in the past. Now, I don't know that he wants to go full, you know, Adam West Batman, but something a little lighter is definitely seems like what he might be pushing for.
There's definitely room for middle ground.
There is room for middle ground, yes. All right, what do you got?
I am out. Oh, no, excuse me. I got one more thing, and this is more for my son than anything else. There was some big Nintendo event today, and so Nintendo announced that they are releasing a crap load of board games to play on the Switch.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
So, Settlers of Catan, Pandemic, and the one that my son was excited about. They're going to have a dungeon crawler adaptation of Munchkin that you can play on the Switch.
Okay.
Also, two others I didn't mention. Carcassonne is going to be one. And they're going to have a deck builder. Lord of the Rings Living Card Game.
Okay.
Where you'll have single and two-player modes. And, of course, they're going to, speaking of crap load, there will be a crap load of DLC for a Living Card Game. And I also heard that Animal Crossing, they're doing another Animal Crossing for the Switch, so...
All right, my last story, Venom to open big at the box office because it's pulling a PG-13 rating. Sony Pictures has gotten its wish, and the MPAA official rating, the upcoming Venom film, a PG-13. While the film's runtime has also been revealed, it is clocking in at 112 minutes, according to AMC Theaters. Despite the film being about a dark anti-hero who effectively eats people, the PG-13 was expected as Sony wishes to one day have Venom face off with Spider-Man, and the latter won't be appearing in an R-rated film. It also keeps the film open to teen audiences. How this decision will go with the critics isn't known at this point, but box office tracking-wise interest in the Tom Hardy-led comic book adaptation is huge. Current estimates have the film targeting an opening weekend of around 60 to 70 million range, which would make it the highest-grossing opening weekend in October history. So... we'll see where this goes. We'll remember that they said this and see if the prediction comes true.
Am I the only one in shock that it's almost here already?
Yeah. No, it's every time I turn around, another one of these movies is dropping.
Yeah, but it was very under the radar.
Mm.
At least I don't know. Anyways. Okay, so that's it for news for you?
Yes.
Okay. So that's going to be it for news, and that's going to be it for this show, this episode of Backseat Box Office. So everyone, thank you for joining us. Our website is backseatproducers.com, where you can find all kinds of different stuff. You can also find our voicemail number. So if you want to be like Tad and tell us what you've been up to, you could find out how to do it there. Other than that, again, thank you for listening. Take care of yourselves. And we hope to catch you next time. Art, what do you want to say?
Good night, everybody.